It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is the Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news. Stats and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
People aren't just waiting on LeBron to mess up so they can harp on him. That's not it at all. He's just being compared to higher standards. Greatness.
Kevin Rayfuse.
We've been given the opportunity that I will actually be going on ESPN.
And Justin Cousart.
You gotta get somebody around Davis. Maybe some guards that can get on the ball, so not Lance Stevenson.
Let's go.
So we just watched this video in studio right now. Justin brought this to our attention, and this is quite literally one of my worst nightmares. Justin, why don't you explain this video?
Well, it's a Red Sox fan, and he's at like the second, you know, the second level of the Red Sox stadium. Yeah, and he probably had one too many drinks, maybe three too many drinks. I don't know how many too many drinks, but he had them. And, he decided to get rid of those drinks and puke. But the problem was he was too drunk, and he just puked over the balcony onto the people below him. And it's just, and it's not, like, just a little bit, like, baby spit up. It's, like, he puked. There's, like, a trail, and it's long, and it's a lot. And if I were the person below, I'd be so pissed.
That's just the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. And because think about it. Not only did you get puke on your head, and probably in your beer if you have a beer, or in your food if you have food.
What if it was like a kid?
If it's a kid, okay, but like...
No. I mean, what if it was a kid that got puked on? Like,
oh, it'd be awful. Like, it's terrible. Well, and more importantly, you can't shower. So you just have to, like,
fester
sit
in it.
And it's just gross. Because no amount of paper towels is cleaning that up.
My thing is, like, what if it's, like, and so I saw this, and my first thought was, like, man, what if it was some little kid's, like, oh, my gosh, my first game, I'm a huge Red Sox fan, I'm going to go to the ballpark, I'm going to sit so close, and then you get puked on. Like, you're never going to go to a game after that.
No.
Like, you can't recover.
No, that's traumatic. I wonder if the guy was trying to do the right thing, because he's puking over the balcony, and I wonder if he thought to himself in his drunken stupor,
like,
it would be more pleasant of me. It would be nicer to not puke all over the railway right here. I'm going to puke over the balcony. And then once he went over and realized,
there's
a group of people.
Was
he just a douchebag puking on a group of people?
I think he looks really drunk. Like, his friends grab him and pull him back. But, like, the damage had already been done. And the people next to him are like, dude, what the hell? Like, you can see him.
He probably should be banned from the stadium forever.
Well, it got caught on ESPN, so I'm sure that he is, right?
I don't know how that works. I really don't. There, on a side note, what was it? The kid that ran onto the field the other day. He ran onto the field, outran all of like the security, jumped the gate, got out, and escaped. But then he got in trouble because he posted the video. Like, what an idiot.
He's just doing it for the attention, man. It's all about the attention.
Well, a lot of people do that now when they steal people's phones, is they post selfies with the phones,
yeah,
and then they
get
catch
caught.
Them.
Yeah, well, because...
Keeping
yeah.
it on baseball, though, did you guys see the pitch from Paul Pierce for the Dodgers?
Yeah.
What is it with basketball players not being able to throw first pitches?
Because
John Wall did the same exact thing.
He was throwing a bounce pass, man. It's basketball.
Yeah. Dude, just but seriously, John Wall, too, right into the dirt.
I'd like to believe, and actually, you know, the Jacksonville Suns are here in town, and I've been asked numerous times by one of our coworkers who can set it up if I want to throw the first pitch at a bit.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out. You've had the offer to throw a first pitch at a Jacksonville Suns game, and you haven't done it yet?
Yeah, what gives, Mel? Why would you say no to that?
A lot of driving involved, coming back to work at like 7 at night.
Are you kidding me?
And like, I just don't want, I don't know, like, I believe that I wouldn't mess it up. But there's that chance that I would mess it up,
dude,
and I don't want to have that chance.
You are that much of a local celebrity that you've got asked to throw a first pitch, and you're not going to
do
it?
I mean, we all got asked. He's like, does anybody on Ape want to do it?
You can't say we all. Like, I'm even on Ape. Oh. No one asked me.
Well, okay, fine. Most of the people got asked, as in me and some of the other
good.
People that are
on. So basically everybody but me?
Actually, yes, literally everybody but you.
Awesome.
Anyways, this is the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Justin, for the love of God, throw this first pitch. My name is Kevin Rafuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie, but she sure does like to talk a lot.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzar.
Giggity.
Giggity. And so right now we're going to check in with Griffin Conley. He's the blog editor for the Drive and Dish podcast. And I do have to say that his blog posts are amazing. And I'm not just saying that's because it's on our website, driveanddishpodcast.com. They seriously are phenomenal. Let's go ahead and check in with Griffin.
Griffin's piece this week is called The Unclutch Gene, Demystifying Modern Clutchness by the Numbers. Griffin, what's going on, man?
Not much. Doing well.
So I guess this is just an incredibly in-depth piece. There's all sorts of statistics broken down, even using the scientific method, and we're going to get into all that in a little bit, but I guess we're going to get it with a little warm-up question. And I guess in all your studying of which players were the clutchest in the NBA, what was the biggest surprise to you?
The biggest surprise to me was Chauncey Billups. His name is Mr. Big Shot. And I sort of expected, you know, I expected everyone's numbers, you know, under a minute in close games to be kind of low. But I was sort of expecting people who had nicknames like Mr. Big Shot or The Answer to be good in, you know, like under 10 seconds. So like last second shots. But I mean, Chauncey didn't excel in any single category that I, you know, dug into. So that was the most surprising one to me.
And I feel like even LeBron James didn't have that many good numbers in that category either.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing with shots under 10 seconds. They tend to be isolation plays.
Right.
I mean, if you watch, and that's just, you know, LeBron, I mean, maybe his isolation numbers in the flow of a game are pretty good, but I think when defenses are keying on him and they know he's not going to pass, he's not as good at and they're not, you know, sagging off his teammates, I just don't think he's necessarily the best one-on-one scorer. So it's sort of right. To be expected.
Well, and I think you pointed this out, too. It's a lot of those last 10-second shots could also be, like, you know, half-court heaves or just, like, you know, a throw, just a desperate put-the-ball-up-there type thing.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, Pau Gasol has shot 7 shots in the final 10 seconds to take the lead or tie from three-point land. Like, that's just, you know, there's no way that the play was drawn up for that, so...
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Pau Gasol from 3 with 10 seconds left is kind of what I'm looking for.
All right, Griffin, well, let's break down your post just a little bit. And I got to tell you, so far, this is hands down my favorite one that you've written. Your hypothesis for this, because you broke it down into the scientific method, which I thought was fantastic, by the way. Your hypothesis is clutchness is just an absence of unclutchness.
Yeah, so that sort of arose. So I have a couple of friends in college who are big baseball fans. And they haven't really hopped on board with the whole sabermetric movement in baseball, which I think is kind of silly. I think my personal opinion is that baseball is all stats and probability, and that sort of made it unwatchable for me.
I completely agree with you, actually. Kevin and I have had that conversation between ourselves many times.
Yeah, I mean, once I sort of tuned into that, it sort of made baseball not as fun to watch for me. But, you know, they always pointed to stats like, oh, he hit 350 or 375 when there's a runner in scoring position. And I said, well, that's not necessarily because he's clutch. That's because the pitcher has to hold these guys on base. He's not necessarily focusing on the pitch. I don't think it's because the hitters are clutch. I think it's, you know, based on other factors. So my theory going into this whole analysis was that clutchness is the absence of unclutchness, meaning that clutchness is the ability to keep one's cool, whereas everybody else or the majority of other people sort of, you know, get tense in pressurized moments. So the ability to keep your cool elevates your game comparatively, but maybe not, you know, better than you would play during the normal flow of a game.
Okay, so it sounds like you were able to at least partially accept the null hypothesis on that.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, and how much data was used to draw the conclusion, and what was the margin for error?
So I went to Basketball Reference, and I used Excel sheets, and so they only had stats for people by the season. So I had to plug everyone's numbers for each category into an Excel sheet and then sum up the totals for the shooting and then take the averages of that for every single person for every single stat. So it took a damn long time. I mean, I hesitated to say the actual number because people who are good with stats and aggregating them might make fun of me because there's probably a better way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it was pretty fun to do it. You know, while I was doing it, because I was discovering new things that I didn't know that wasn't really public knowledge. People, I feel like not many people have come out with stats like these. It's comprehensive, in my opinion. So
Well, basketball references, basketball references, just phenomenal. My next question for you, because you approach this from the scientific method approach, is, you know, your hypothesis or anybody's hypothesis is great, but a lot of the times you really have to define what something is. So I was wondering what your operational definition of clutch was for your hypothesis.
Yeah, you know, I said on Twitter to a couple of people that commented, that was the hardest part of this whole thing. Like any chump can aggregate stats on Excel sheets. Just depends on if you're nerdy enough to have the time to do it. Really, defining clutchness is the hardest part. You know, I had someone say that it's being able to pull through in the final 2 minutes. I had someone say it's, you know, making the biggest shot in the biggest game. Those situations vary in sample size. I mean, I did playoff shots to tie or take the lead under 24 seconds, and I think the person with the most field goal attempts was Kobe with 24. So, I mean, you really can't take much, you know, you got to take whatever the field goal percentage is in those situations with a grain of salt.
Another thing that I noticed from it is you were looking for the player who was the least clutch, but in the end, in doing that, you also had to find who was the most clutch. And, you know, what I got from it is that's Ray Allen. Do you think there's anybody else that might, you know, be up there with him?
Yeah, I think Robert Horry really lived up to his billing. He shot 42.9% from three in his career. Another thing to point out is the Basketball Reference stats only go back to 2000, 2001, and I think Robert Horry was a rookie in 93, 94. Okay. So it really only encapsulates about half of his career. But in that portion of his career, he shot 42.9% from three with under 2 minutes to go in a, you know, with the game within five. Mm-hmm. And for his career, he shot something like 34%. So he increased his three-point percentage 8%, which goes directly against my original hypothesis. So I think Robert Horry is definitely up there as someone who elevates his game. And then Brandon Roy, if I'm choosing someone to isolate, I might go with Brandon Roy. If I'm drawing up a play, I'll probably go with Ray Allen. But Brandon Roy definitely excelled in all these situations.
And you had said in your piece, too, that Ray Allen's a man having shot 40% on threes, but you also say that Vince Carter is close behind. But a question I had for you, because I was looking at the information that you provided, was that Vince Carter actually shot a little bit, he shot the same percentage, but he had a little bit larger of a sample size. And I'm wondering why you still place Vince Carter behind Ray Allen if you're just looking at the pure numbers.
Probably just personal bias, for being honest. You know, that everyone always points to Ray Allen as a clutch player now because of one shot.
It might be the most famous shot in all of the NBA ever.
Right, exactly. So, you know, people, you know, he gets his, you know, the moniker of being clutch from that shot. But if you look at his whole body of work, he expanded out, it still, you know, validates that label. And a lot of other players, it doesn't, you know.
And I also noticed that Anthony Davis was at the top of a lot of those lists, and if I remember correctly, all of them. But I didn't read you mentioning him a whole bunch. I was wondering why that is.
Yeah. I should have mentioned him more, especially early on and a little bit continuously. But I did. I don't know if you missed it. I said the Our Father, but with Anthony Davis's name and some other basketball jargon thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
So Anthony Davis. The jury's still out on whether he's a. I don't really believe in clutchness, but the jury's still out on whether he's a clutch player. Sample size is small, but so far so good, and so far so great.
And I also noticed that you don't seem to be a big fan of Hamid Haddadi, and I guess I just don't really understand.
He's a former random NBA player of the week.
Yeah, he is a former random NBA player of the week, but you didn't really speak with him in high regards.
Well, no, it wasn't really more a shot at him. In fact, I sort of meant to take a shot more at Lionel Hollins, who had Hamid Haddadi in the game in 2012-13 with under 10 seconds to go. I mean, maybe, you know, Marc Gasol fouled out or something, but what is Hamid Haddadi even doing in that game to begin with? For those who haven't read it, he shot a shot in the final 10 seconds of to tie or take the lead, and he missed it because he's Hamid Haddadi. And maybe he's a putback or something. But I just thought that was a funny little thing as I was going through the data.
And so you also had a little bit of findings on Michael Kidd Gilchrist. I guess, do you want to point out a little bit of about those?
Yeah, so I looked into, and there's actually another chart that I didn't put in the piece. I might put that in a piece later. So when I was researching that, I uncovered that Michael Kidd-Gilchrist played 58 minutes this past season with where the score was within five, under 5 minutes to go in the game, and he shot one shot in 58 minutes. One shot. So that's either his confidence, his own personal confidence, or his teammates not having confidence in him. But something, I mean, if you shoot one shot in 58 minutes, that's insane.
Tim had pointed out to us that you're a Nick Johnson fan.
Yeah. I mean, I guess. I mean, the Rockets stiffed Steph Curry. You know, I don't know if you guys saw that. A lot of people thought before the Rockets-Warriors series that James Harden was going to go out and meet Steph Curry like superstars always do before series begin. Mm-hmm. But the Rockets instead sent out Nick Johnson to go shake hands with Steph Curry. And Steph Curry, it's about the maddest I've ever seen him because, you know, he keeps his cool so well. He just walks away and he shakes his head and he looks back at the Rockets bench. And, I mean, you sort of knew from there how that series was going to go.
Yeah, you can definitely tell. I think the other time I saw him mad was during the finals with the Cavs. I think there was one other point where he made pretty much a stink face when, you know, everybody had pretty much written him off.
It was probably game four when they were going to Dellavedova.
Yeah, and there's a guy, speaking of Steph Curry, who doesn't actually, it was probably one of the most surprising ones, doesn't rank well in many of these categories.
Well, the other thing, and maybe this is just us, because we've brought this up a few times, the other thing is Steph Curry really hasn't had to worry about too many, you know, close games from my understanding, because they, you know, they always won by a pretty fair margin, or, you know, by the last 2 minutes of the fourth, it was, you know, to be fair, pretty much over at that point for the Warriors.
Right.
They had already won. So that could be something also that's filtered into that.
Yeah, I figure it's more of a result. I mean, I have it in this chart that I didn't post, and I'll post it probably later this week.
Okay.
He shot something like 22% from the field with under 5 minutes to go, game within five. My guess is that they had the lead in a lot of those situations, and they just sort of had him run the clock out and, you know, heave an isolation jump shot, which are hard to make. So that probably lowers his stats a little bit.
So I have one final question. This was one of the funnier parts of the article to me, is that Royal Ivies has the nickname of Cheese, which I didn't know was a thing. And so I guess that leads my question to be, what is your favorite NBA nickname?
Oh, man. My favorite NBA nickname.
I'm a pretty big fan of the Furanimal. Fareed?
Man, it's escaping me. I guess the best, my favorite historic one is, it's got to be the round mound of rebound for Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
The Slim Reaper is pretty good.
Slim Reaper is good.
Durant doesn't like that one, though. He says he doesn't want people to call him that.
Why?
Because he doesn't like it. I don't know.
So he's trying to put on the I'm a nice guy thing, which I think we all know by now Durant's not a nice guy.
The Slim Angel? Also, is Cheese a good nickname? Like, is that a good thing to have?
I wouldn't want, I mean, would you want to be called Cheese?
No, because, Cheese smells bad, so, like...
You also could stack that cheese.
Oh, you could talk about, yeah. All right. I don't know. That's debatable whether or not that one's a good one.
It was just a funny little thing I saw, so.
Okay, well, before we get you out of here, you did add one thing to the blog that you haven't done before, and that was a comment section. And honestly, I have no idea how you did that, but that's pretty awesome. So if people go to driveanddishpodcast.com and they click on the blog link, they can go ahead and read your blog, and then they can leave you a comment in there. Are you scared of the internet trolls?
Nah, bring on the haters.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Griffin. We really appreciate it. Again, the blog is at driveanddishpodcast.com.
Boom. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thanks so much, dude.
And joining us today, talking about the Orlando Magic, which is pretty cool because we haven't talked about the Orlando Magic in what seems like a bit too long, is Jeffrey Wakovich. He's a writer for Orlando Magic Stuff and Vavil USA. Jeffrey, how's it going, man?
It's good. How are you guys?
Doing wonderful. So you are down in Orlando. You cover the Orlando Magic, but you were just watching a game that was very far away in Africa, actually. What do you think of Vukovic?
Well, he didn't play a whole lot. He played the second lowest amount on his team after Kenneth Fareed, but he played solidly. I mean, it's basically like all-star game, not a lot of defense, and a lot of scoring and highlight plays. His offense was there for the most part. It took him a few shots to get in a rhythm. But the one thing that really surprised me that you don't see him do a lot was he was really hustling, especially when they were down 20, to get him back into the game. And he had one play in the corner where the ball was going out, and he kind of not really dove, but he jumped and threw it off Biz Macbiombo to save the possession.
Yeah, I know I was reading a lot of articles where he was saying, like, it's a dream come true to be able to, you know, represent the NBA over in Africa, and I know he really, really wanted to be there. And I know, I think it was, it probably was pretty cool. I think I saw him guarding Hakeem at one point.
Yep, he got scored on, the only player.
You know, but that's, I mean, that's kind of a cool thing to be able to say, Hakeem scored on you, right?
Yep, I can't remember the last time a Magic player got scored on.
Exactly. Okay, so let's change it up and let's talk more of the stuff that we're looking forward to with the Orlando Magic. So they have a new coach, Scott Skiles. What can we expect from him? You know, is the team going to be taking a different approach to their games? Are they going to be more offensive-minded now? What can we expect with him?
Well, I think their defense is going to be a lot better, and I definitely think they're going to win more than 25 games. I'm hoping for somewhere around 500.
Okay. Do you think they'll make the playoffs?
Yeah, there's a ton of buzz about the Orlando Magic right now, talking to people around the league. They seem to be the team that the league's buzzing about, but the media's not yet.
I think there's definitely a chance. I thought they were going to make it last year, but they didn't really have the best of coach, and there wasn't a lot of consistency, but I think that's one of the biggest things that Skiles will bring is consistency and holding players accountable and giving everyone a defined role to stick with.
And what do you make of the rumors that the Magic are nearing a deal to acquire Shabazz Napier?
I believe it was actually completed, and I actually really like that deal. I liked him in UConn. Last season with Miami wasn't fantastic, but he's a nice change of pace from Elfrid, and they basically got him for nothing.
Yeah, and he played really well with the Pelicans, too. And so if you're looking at the point guard situation, that would be Shabazz Napier, Elfrid Payton, C.J. Watson, which I'm a huge fan of the C.J. Watson signing. And I'm just wondering, by them signing Shabazz Napier, who is a younger guard and somebody that they would need to develop, what does that say about the Magic's outlook on Elfrid Payton moving forward? Is he the point guard of the future that they kind of thought he was going to be last year, or maybe not so much?
I think it does bring up some questions. Alongside Victor Oladipo, who's not a great shooter, Shabazz Napier is probably a better fit. After watching so many games of Elfrid Payton and Victor Oladipo locking down backcourts, it's hard to pick something else over that or anything short of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, at least.
Yeah, and I, you know, C.J. Watson, like we just mentioned, is a really big pickup for the Orlando Magic. I think he's somewhere roughly a career 40% three-point shooter, so that'll definitely help open up the floor. But bringing back a little bit of Elfrid Payton, you know, he had a really promising rookie year. He averaged 9 points and 6.5 assists, but he shot just 26% from behind the arc and a horrid 55% at the free throw line. What's the feeling among Magic fans with him? Is he the point guard of the future there? Do fans love him, or do they want to see the franchise move in a different direction for the point guard position?
Well, I definitely think the fans love him. There was a little bit around the draft time about the Magic trying to trade up. There wasn't anything official, but a lot of fans wanted to try and trade up and get D'Angelo Russell or someone who fits better with their system.
I feel like a lot of people actually wanted to trade up and try to get Russell. But okay, so we were down in Summer League, and we got to see Elfrid Payton play a little bit. And, I mean, I don't want to say his shot didn't look like it improved, but it didn't even really seem like he was taking many shots. Were you able to watch any more Summer League games of him, and maybe was that just a fluke game and he actually has been working on his shot? Has he got better at it? What are your thoughts on his Summer League play so far, or this year?
Well, he only played 2 games in the Summer League, and it didn't seem like he was given 110% effort like he would in a regular season game, but in some interviews, Scott Skiles has said that his jumpers improved a lot more. And obviously, Scott Skiles has spent more time with Elfrid Payton than me, so I have to trust him on that one.
And who's going to start at power forward on opening night for the Orlando Magic? Depending on what they consider, whether or not they want to play big or small, they have a few options.
The million-dollar question for Orlando. It seems like they have their 1-3 pretty well set, and they have Vucevic at the 5. But for the 4-man, it's really, I believe, a 3-man race between Aaron Gordon, who only started a handful of games, Channing Frye, who started a good chunk of games, and then Dwayne Dedman, who was a starter closer to the end of the year. And all three of them are really different.
Yeah, Channing Frye, he was a really big signing and one that I absolutely loved for the Orlando Magic when it happened, but he had a disappointing season last season with the Magic. But in Phoenix, he was really effective because of the amount of pick and pops he was playing with Goran Dragic and Eric Bledsoe at the time. Do you expect to see the Orlando Magic run more pick and pop with Channing Frye, with Payton and Oladipo, or have the Magic kind of given up on that as an experiment?
I don't think they're going to give up on Channing Frye just yet. He still has 3 years left on his contract, and he's not someone who relies a lot on his athleticism, so he shouldn't be too much different this season. When he really put his mind to it, he was shooting really well. He just looked out of it sometimes during the season, especially towards the end when it looked like they weren't going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and he's the type of player that needs a guard to set him up. He's not going to create his own shot. Him just hovering around the three-point line, depending on the team that they're playing, isn't necessarily effective. Like, they need to put him in pick-and-pop situations.
Okay, and so I guess we'll bring it back to Aaron Gordon a little bit, because I know we saw him in Summer League, and he was probably one of the most impressive players out there. He really was working on his shot. He came out firing it, and like you said, Elfrid Payton didn't look like he was giving it 110%, but Aaron Gordon definitely looked like he was. But the problem with Aaron Gordon is, can he stay healthy? I believe I remember hearing stories about how he broke his jaw. How's he doing with that? Is he getting better? Is he going to be able to stay healthy this coming year?
Another one of those big questions. A lot that has to do with the Magic is if everyone can stay healthy and if they can continue to improve from the inside. All that adds up. And if Aaron Gordon can stay healthy, then I think he's going to have a real breakout year. And we could be talking about one of those Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard kind of breakout stars with him.
What's Aaron Gordon's ceiling? I mean, he's obviously athletic. I personally was so encouraged with his summer league play. What's his ceiling?
A lot of people put it about where Sean Marion is. I think his ceiling's about Draymond Green with more athleticism. I think he can be that kind of player for the Magic.
For Magic fans, that's got to be really exciting. Well, and another thing we want to move it over to is let's talk about Mario Hezonja. What can we expect from him this rookie year coming up? Is he going to have a really good rookie year? Is his overseas game going to be able to translate to the NBA? I know in the summer league game he hit a shot within like 12 seconds left in the game to win. So what can we expect from him coming up this rookie year?
If I could answer that with just one word, a lot of swagger. Three words.
So you were a fan of the signing then?
Oh, I loved him getting picked. Once Porzingis was off the board at number four, that was the guy I was looking for. I've seen as much highlights as you can find on YouTube of him at Barcelona. As Aaron Gordon said, he's been a professional playing against grown men since he was really young. I think 14 is when he joined Barcelona.
Yeah, he's one of those players that were a bit difficult, I think, for a lot of people to scout, too, because there's just not, you know, when they aren't playing the college ball, when they're playing overseas, it's just harder for people to get that view of those players. And just, I guess that we can bring it over to the Knicks slightly. What do you think of the Knicks pick and Porzingis? Were you high on that at all?
I was one of the few people who really liked that one on draft day. Obviously, Knicks fans weren't too thrilled about it, as you can see by the booing. But once Summer League came around, everyone started to think that he was the next great thing. And he could be. He's really long, and he's adding weight. If you look at where he was from last year, you can tell that he's visibly bigger. And in a couple years, he could be really good.
Yeah, he has a really nice touch. He's really good defensively. And as you just mentioned, he's really long. And when it happened, I thought Knicks fans are kind of freaking out. I can't really think of a lot of times in which a rookie has had a huge impact on a team anyway, so I don't really know what Knicks fans were expecting. But bringing back to the Magic, I was a little bit surprised by this personally. When they re-signed Tobias Harris, because it seemed like neither Harris nor the Magic were super high on the relationship. You know, the player didn't really seem like he'd want to be there. There were rumors of him wanting to play with the Knicks. The Magic had signed Aaron Gordon. They have Fournier, Hezonja. What did you think of them re-signing the chucker that is Tobias Harris?
The chucker that is Tobias Harris. I like that one. I really thought he was a good re-signing. I've always liked him as a player since he was traded from Milwaukee. And I actually can't imagine a team without him. I think he's a real big piece. re-signing him allowed him to move Mo Harkless, which I'm still a little upset about because I love Mo Harkless. I actually just bought a shirt 2 days before he was traded.
Oh.
How could you be Mo Harkless?
That's awesome. Where did you get that shirt? I got to get one.
I don't remember. I'll send you the link so I can remember it. He actually quoted it with the fire emojis and said, ha ha.
Oh, that's awesome. So, and I wanted to ask you this because on your Twitter, you said Aaron Gordon once referred to you as a little homie. So I feel like there's got to be a backstory to that.
Before I've only been a journalist for about a year. And before that, or it might have been right about the same time, I was being the nosy fan that I am, looking at every highlight I could find of him on YouTube. And once I ran out, I tweeted at him and I was like, hey, Aaron, could you do something exciting so I have something to watch on YouTube? And he sent me a link to his Ball is Life thing and said, I hope you like it. And I was like, I've already seen that. You're a really good player, something to that effect. And he was like, thanks, little homie.
That's something
she wrote.
And so are you credentialed for the Orlando Magic? Are you going to be credentialed this coming season?
I'm going to be credentialed for some games this season. I'm not credentialed for the entire season.
And when, because, you know, we're in Jacksonville and you're obviously in Orlando. We have the Jacksonville Giants here. They're an ABA team, but the Orlando Magic are as close as we have to a home team. Although you see a bunch of people with Miami Heat jerseys and, you know, you can take from that what you will, given Miami Heat fans. but what when you're at an Orlando Magic game, and I've only been to a few, but being a Suns fan, I've noticed kind of the same thing with the Orlando Magic fans as the Phoenix Suns fans, in that there just doesn't seem to be a lot of energy in the building. And what do you think is the reason for that? Or maybe you just get something completely different from the games and the ones I've attended.
I have about the same feel. It's hard for fans to get excited about 20-win teams. But I think now that we have Gordon and Hazonia, who are really flashy players and who can forget Victor Oladipo's 540 in the dunk contest or 360 against the Rockets. Those are some fun players, and it just will take time. And I think this season it should be better. And once they start winning, the crowd should get a lot better. I mean, it will probably never be Oracle Arena with the Warriors, but we should be able to get somewhere with some good fans and good excitement.
Well, and so we'll bring it over to Oladipo because I don't think we've hit on him yet. You know, what can we expect from Oladipo? Is he going to, what do you think he's increased or worked on the most this offseason?
Well, Victor Oladipo, with his own term, is probably the most feathery player in the league. I don't know if you guys have heard that, but he's been working out with Dwayne Dedman. Both of them posted pictures on Instagram about that this week. And I think he's just going to work on his shooting a lot more and his ways to score. I think we'll see a lot more shooting from him, especially. And his three-point percentage, I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it should be, I think it will take a pretty solid leap because he's heard what people are saying, and he knows that he has to get better at shooting for the offense to work.
I think I'd be remiss to not mention that I met Victor Oladipo last season at Gringo's, and he's a very pleasant gentleman.
That's a shameless plug.
Yeah, but was last season a fluke for Evan Fournier, or is he a legit wing rotational player that can play impactful minutes in the NBA?
I believe wholeheartedly that he's legit. I don't think the beginning of last season was a fluke. He's a really good shooter, and he's really crafty, surprisingly, and he's also surprisingly athletic. If you've ever seen him in layup lines, he just doesn't show it a lot during games.
Is Vukovic going to be playing most minutes? Like, who are they going to bring in after him? Is Aaron Gordon going to see much, you know, play at the center position? I know he's kind of taller, but who do they have backing up Vukovic?
That's where it gets tough. With Kyle Quinn taking his talents to New York, they don't have too many bigs. I mean, if Dwayne Dedman doesn't start, I think he becomes Vucevic's main backup, and they just signed Jason Smith, who's a renowned Magic killer, and now that he's not dropping 18 against us on the Knicks, he should be able to help and be a solid big off the bench.
Our blog editor, Griffin Connolly, he did rankings already because he wanted to have a little bit of fun for next year, and he said that for the Magic, he didn't think the Magic could win or get into the playoffs because he doesn't believe Vukovic is the center that can get you there. Do you agree with that, or do you think Vukovic could definitely be the center of this team moving forward, or do they kind of have to build the team around someone else and Vukovic kind of move into this role player type position?
I think last year we saw by his big play and a resume that almost got him all-star selection that he can be a star player that you build around, but I don't think he's the ideal player that you want to build on. I don't think right now the Magic have any player that really stands out as who could be the star. I think Mario Hezonja probably has the best chance with all that he's able to do with his athleticism and shooting, but I think Vucevic is probably better off being your second or third guy rather than your top guy.
And then we kind of have this question with all younger teams, and we asked this last week when we were having our Sixers interview, is, you know, with the younger guys, it's hard to tell who's, you know, stepping up and being the leader of the team. I guess, who are you seeing that's kind of taking that role and you know, going with it? And I would assume it would be Victor Oladipo, but is there someone else that's also kind of taking the lead role in running this team and bringing everybody together?
Oladipo is the guy I've been seeing. He's young, but he's a really good leader. He's vocal. He makes sure everyone's where they're supposed to be, and I think he's the leader for the future.
Okay, yeah, and it was cool to see him out at Summer League, you know, watching the team and you know, being there for his younger players and other co-players. So
yeah, I'm not sure if we mentioned this before, but I met him one time.
Oh gosh, here we go again.
Very nice gentleman. So Jeffrey, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find you on Twitter?
At ORL Magic Jeff.
So yeah, hit up Jeff on Twitter and the link in his bio if you want to learn more about him and hit him up. And well, thank you so much for hanging out with us today, Jeff, and we'll be sure to talk to you when the Orlando Magic are playing.
Yeah, hopefully we can meet each other at a game at some point. I know we'll be going down there credentialed ourselves this coming season, so I hope that we can run into you and possibly Victor Oladipo at Gringo's as well.
I look forward to that.
Cool. Thanks so much, Jeffrey.
Having me.
Later, bud. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. And again, leave us a review on iTunes, please. It's a good way for us to move up the rankings. It's not just shameless self-promotion. It really helps us advance. So if you leave us a review, good, bad, somewhere in between, it would definitely help out.
And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can. I'm at Justin C. on the air. Our Drive-In Dish podcast page is at Drive-In Dish NBA. You can follow Tim at Radio Tim NBA, and Kevin is at Refuse to Lose.
And we aren't just on iTunes. We are on a ton of other apps. So if you have an Android, you have Stitcher, Player TuneIn, Player FM. You also have TuneIn. We're on the Podbean app, so make sure to hop on there. Also, our website, driveanddishpodcast.com. We interviewed Griffin Conley earlier, but every week he's posting up new blog posts, so please take a moment, go over there, driveanddishpodcast.com. Also, hit him up on Twitter and let him know how fantastic of a writer is, because we aren't tooting our own horn. He honestly is amazing.
Yes.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well,
hey! Let's go while we're young!
Alright, I think they get the point.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.